bad memory. Triggerfinger moving back and forth, I stood staring at images of the beast. I compared my features to his, same as I had already done with Medianoche. You said he had a wife and other children?
He did, but he didn't give a rat's ass about either. All he cared about was the four horsemen. This was his brainchild. He was an excellent warrior. He was brilliant. Together we were hungry lions chasing gazelles through fields and across rooftops around the world.
I paused. I said, and Arizona killed him. She killed the beast with her blade.
No, I killed him. I killed the beast.
Arizona hit him with her blade.
She wounded him. Then I put a bullet in his head, like you put one in mine.
I stopped staring at the photos of the military man, gone rogue. I faced Medianoche. You sent a team after my mother.
I did. And fate led them to the landscaper.
They attacked Alvin White.
And Preacher filled him with lead and dumped him in the Chattahoochee River.
You sent the Preacher to kill my family.
Smyrna, Georgia, on Oakwood Trace, town home owned by Nia Simone Bichot, but being rented through an agency by Jeremy Bentham. He'll catch a bullet if he gets in the way.
You found my mother and my brothers.
Hours ago. Thelma and those two trick baby bastards should be done by now. Gaucho.
Those are my brothers.
They are the spawn of my goddamn enemy.
She is my mother.
Do you think I give a shit? You see this hole where my eye used to be?
I guess we're done talking.
I guess we are.
The only reason I didn't kill you before was because I thought you were my father. My mother told me that after I had shot you the first time. I had to live with that anger and guilt. Thanks for taking that off the table, Media fucking Noche. It will make doing this much easier.
You're nothing, Gaucho. Just like your whore mother. You're nothing.
He battled through his stroke, his weakness, stood up like a bear, roared, became 10 feet tall. His rage echoed, and he became the devil in my nightmares, the man I feared. Misnate. Mizanit. Mizanacht. Anernos. Gijersi. Medianoche. He cursed me, came at me, lunged, and promised me death. He conquered his stroke and became Mr. Midnight. Chapter 29, El Fin de la Guerra. And our war would end. But when one bloody war ended, a bloodier conflict was born to take its place. Peace was the enemy of those who loved war and the spoils of war. After it was done loading the information I needed, then downloading a worm that would corrupt their systems when activated, I pulled the pen drive that had software intelligent enough to be able to crack open any computer's system from the horseman's main computer. I dropped the pen drive into my jacket pocket. I finished drinking a Quilmes Cristal, then went to the bathroom. I took a leak, then picked up a comb that was in the beast's immaculate bathroom. It had hair follicles. It had his DNA. Had to be his. After I dropped the comb into a plastic bag, I looked around at the things the beast had owned. I took pictures of his images and awards, of his books, and then I pulled 3 photos from inside silver frames. I folded those and eased them into my inside suit pocket. Then I sent a text message to a number with 809 as its area code. Done, but not safe, I left the apartment of the beast of war, gun in hand. No horseman or guard was in the hallway. I kept my eye and gun on the door to Medianoche's war-torn apartment while I pushed the button to call the elevator. My fingers had left blood on the lift's call button. I looked at my bloodied hands, wiped that print away, same as I had done everything I had touched. Blood covered my expensive suit. None of it mine this time. A soft, feminine, programmed voice announced,
Piso 17.
With the lobby being the 0th floor, I was 18 floors above ground. An object falling on Earth would drop at 9.8 meters per second faster every second. It would take but a moment to reach maximum speed. I felt that when I had base jumped to escape the wrath of the horsemen. A parachute changed the physics of falling, kept me from plummeting like a cannonball. It wasn't the fall that killed a man. It was the sudden deceleration. It was the abrupt stop. 100% of people died after falling 85 feet. The pedophile at the Gherkin never had a chance. The men I have thrown from planes never had a chance. One target had been dropped from only 2 stories. He was the exception. The order was to make sure he didn't die. It was a South American job I had done years ago, after I had vanished without a trace and left Angelina sobbing and worried at the end of the world. Off the shore of Brazil, over the Atlantic Ocean, less than 100 miles from the epicenter of Sao Paulo, since Ilha de Queimada Grande. Snake Island. No sane man went there. It was overrun by snakes and remained undeveloped. The island had between 1 and 5 poisonous snakes per square meter. They said at least 4,000 poisonous golden lanceheads slithered in a population of more than 250,000 snakes. Some said it was closer to 500,000 snakes. I just knew it was too many snakes to fit on a plane. If I could have, that was where I would have taken Medianoche. I would have dropped him from a Cessna on that island. But with my luck, he would have survived. Snakes would have bitten the devil and died. He would have swum to Brazil. I thought about 12 ways to kill Medianoche as the elevator descended. The programmed voice announced,
Piso cero.
The door opened, and I was armed, had a loaded gun and an itchy trigger finger. I anticipated another guard, another horseman, or Medianoche himself. I had descended 18 levels much slower than it had taken me to base jump, much slower than a 200-plus-pound man would fall. 8 floors would have been enough. I had been twice that height, plus 2 floors. The guard I had fought was where I'd left him. He hadn't moved an inch. I knew he was dead. But I had known a man was dead before. I put 2 RIP bullets in his head to be sure. If he rose from those 2 shots, Jesus would finally be impressed by the devil's work. When I opened the glass doors and exited into the cold in front of me, as a light rain drizzled across this section of Buenos Aires, I saw Medianoche. I stopped moving when I saw Mr. Midnight. I saw the man who, since I was a boy, I believed was dead. I found he was alive and survived a point-blank shot to the head and believed he had the powers of Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, Chucky, Pinhead, Tall Man, and Michael Myers. He could be part Dalek, or a 9th-series Cylon, or just be the devil. Gun-trained, I took tentative steps until I saw the bulletproof raiment of a man who wore only the best a Bogota clothier had to offer. Today, I wore a suit by the same clothier. We had fought upstairs. It wasn't close to the battle we had in the Vichas, but it was a fight. He was temporarily weakened by a stroke, but he was still strong. I went back to his quarters, dragged him with me, and I beat him with his saxophone. I beat him for every time he had called my mother a whore, for every time he had called me a trick baby, for every time he had called my brothers the same. He had dehumanized us all. Once dehumanized, the object wasn't worth living and was easy to kill and feel nothing about it. It was the way nations had been taken out. He told me I wasn't his son. He told me he had killed my brother's father. He told me that my mother was dead, and so were Robert and Stephen. I dragged him out on his patio. I threw him over the rail. I grunted and threw him, and the old soldier had fallen without a sound. Now I stood in front of his body. Twisted, he looked so small, he didn't look like him anymore. His body was broken, but I couldn't tell how badly. Most of the damage would be internal. His head was misshapen, his face now unrecognizable. Blood came out of his ears and mouth. But other than that, he looked okay. He looked like he could get up, wipe away blood, pop a BC powder, and start a war. He reminded me of the body of Evelyn McHale resting atop a crumpled limousine after she jumped to her death from the Empire State Building in the 40s. Only he had hit the ground. It was dark, the thick of night. If anyone had seen him, They hadn't screamed. I looked up, did the math in my head, calculated his speed at impact. He had tumbled, gone end over end, then smacked into the concrete walkway at more than 100 miles an hour. At some point, the height didn't matter. A man dropped from a height would achieve terminal velocity and wouldn't be able to fall any harder than he was already falling. If Senorita Raven hadn't swerved her car when we were on the damp streets of Ciudad Evita, our head-on crash would have been harder. No one would have walked away. I went to Medianoche, took out a white handkerchief. I took some of Beelzebub's DNA. I still wanted to know what I was to Mr. Midnight, if anything. The comb I'd found in the Beast's bathroom, his DNA and mine, would also be sent to my contact at DNA Solutions. I kicked Medianoche. Then I jumped back like a frightened child. Expected him to groan and get up, rise like a riled bear once again. He didn't move. He was in permanent hibernation. I took a few pictures with my phone. The photos were more tragic than gruesome. Then I unloaded my gun into his body, let my trigger finger hiccup, then reloaded and unloaded again. RIP bullets exhausted, I wiped the gun down and threw it on his corpse. I said, "Come back from that, motherfucker. Come back from that." Covered in sweat and blood, I spat on the devil and limped away. Chapter 30. La Reina. I went back to the building, used Foxy Brown's black card to open another unmarked door. This one led to the horseman's private garage. It was like stepping into a well-appointed bat cave. There were 3 more Mercedes-Benz, 4 more BMW motorcycles, and armament that had probably been furnished by the traitor Benjamin Assad. I commandeered a Benz. I turned the car on and it purred. A CD started to play. I pointed the AMG toward Greater Buenos Aires, toward EZE, their Ministro Pistarini International Airport, or Ezeiza International Airport, whatever they called it, meant nothing to me. I had bigger issues. Bigger than the Porteñas who marched the streets for the right to abortions, bigger than the protests against Brazil, bigger than the protest against paper plants in Uruguay, bigger than the protest against part of Avenida Pueyrredón becoming a two-way street, bigger than the world falling apart and the banks collapsing in Reykjavik. They were bigger because they were my problems. And now I felt like Atlas with the world on my shoulders. My head throbbed as I sped by graffiti, public housing, cantinas, farmacias, locutorios, remises, and Shell gas stations. Tears formed in my eyes. I imagined 1 large coffin and 2 smaller ones. I no longer had Shotgun to keep an eye out for me. I had failed him. I had failed my brothers and my mother. I should have gone to Atlanta first, saved my family, not come here. I remembered what Senorita Raven had told me. 3 coffins, 1 large, 2 small. My throat tightened. Then it burned. My eyes watered, and I could barely breathe. I wept. Back in jeans, a sweater, trainers, and a leather jacket, carrying a backpack, I boarded a Gulfstream G650, a plane that could fly close to Mach 90. Cream leather seats, sofas, meeting area, bed. Might have had a shower, so when you landed, you left the plane fresh. It was a flying mansion. When I'd come down here with Shotgun and Constantine, we'd been on this plane, flying about 50,000 feet at 700 miles per hour, moving 1 mile every 5 seconds. A pace that would leave Usain Bolt in awe. The same slender Ethiopian, model-esque Russian, Arabian princess, and gorgeous Brazilian flight attendants greeted me at the door of a plane large enough to transport a party of 18. They smelled nice, refreshing after inhaling the stench on the streets of Buenos Aires. The Ethiopian's scent was smoldering aldehydic amber with floral notes, the kind that melted into your skin. The model-esque Russian smelled like luscious Nag Champa and mind-altering musks. The Arabian princess, one inhale made a man smile and think of buttery tuberose, tropical frangipani, and indolic white florals. The Brazilian had a butt that would win awards in her country, and the aroma of animalistic chipra. I had met them before. This was the jet Scams had sent to bring Shotgun, Constantine, and me from Atlanta down into the den of trouble. The flight attendants had no idea how much my world had changed since then. Their combined scents were subtle, perfect. If a city smelled that good, I'd never leave. Would stay in bed, masturbating. They asked me about Constantine. I told them he wasn't coming on this trip. They asked me about Shotgun. I told them he wasn't coming either. Left it at that. Classical music played. Flat-screen televisions were on CNN, the international version, the sound on mute. The scent of cloves assaulted my senses the moment I stepped on the plane. That aroma came from Jarum, an Indonesian kritik. It was a clove cigarette made in Kudus, central Java. It was as classy as wearing a $2,000 Italian suit while playing Beethoven on a baby grand piano. Jarum was Scams's brand, his trademark smoke, as it had been his father's brand and trademark. I smelled cloves and knew the legacy of Scams hadn't died with him at sea. A woman spoke in Tagalog. She was angry, yelling at someone. I knew her Filipino voice well, better than I knew my own voice. Used to hear her voice in my dreams. It was Arizona, the woman many knew as Queen Scams. To me, she would always be Arizona. She was at the back of the plane. When I stepped on the Ferrari of airplanes, I felt an ache in my heart. Shotgun should have been here taking this trip. He'd have a funeral, and I wouldn't be able to attend. If I did, I would still feel so much anger. As soon as I moved beyond the smiling flight attendants, I saw a different Filipino woman. She wore a short white blouse, tight black skirt, high heels with red soles. Sierra was slightly darker than Arizona, in energy and complexion, owned a fuller body, more ass and tits to serve as a distraction, her meanness and coldness boundless, her damage deeper than the average sociopath. She was a woman who disturbed men, destroyed men, left them coming back for more. That pussycat doll had dyed her hair from black to strawberry blonde since I saw her last. Usually she wore it pulled back in a ponytail, so her face looked 10 years younger than she was. But now it was half up, half down, in a gorgeous style. Even with the schoolgirl face, she had a body that said she was a woman. A diabolical, cunning woman who had barely survived Buenos Aires. She was Arizona's sister. She was Queen Scams's younger sister, so I guess that made her the Princess Scams. Her perfume was musky and sweet, an olfactory negligee. Last time I saw Sierra, it was after she, Scams, her sister Arizona, Constantine, and her brother had been in a shootout with the Four Horsemen. She'd been shot and beaten, was almost dead. She was fucked up. Her hair was matted from almost being blown up in the streets of Buenos Aires, lips chapped, a face battered and bruised, lips and cheeks swollen, on a stretcher, a victim of a gunshot wound, shivering from pain and cold, and being loaded onto a yacht in Puerto Madero. I wasn't sure she had survived. I thought she was on the yacht with Scams when the Four Horsemen had hunted them down, then sank them like the Titanic. It was nice to know that while I was fighting for my life, while my family was being attacked, while Shotgun was being hunted and murdered, she was out getting her nails done and her ass waxed. I nodded once. My expression remained no nonsense. She nodded once and maintained her stoic countenance. I said, "I need a laptop and the internet, please, as soon as you can." She moved out of my way. When I looked back at her from the next compartment, Sierra was still watching me. We looked at each other and held eye contact for half a minute. She had a way of looking at a man in an expressionless way that made him feel like he was less than the scum on the bottom of her shoes. Then she turned, and the woman I had been ordered to kill once upon a time walked away, moving her ass like it was talking in code, her tight skirt making her butt cheeks wink left and right with her bipedal stride. I saw what father and son had seen in her. Arizona had been the brains, the one giving orders. Her sister was a quiet seductress. Neither was weak. I had seen both of them put men in the ground. When we had been in a shootout in Miami off I-95, I had seen Sierra kill a man in the most horrible of ways. Then she went and had ice cream. Arizona's hair was the same as it had been before. Long, dyed light brown with highlights. Her perfume was the kind that gave men erections before they ever laid an eye on her. Her perfume wore stilettos, had Kathleen Turner's voice and body heat, and could get a man to kill for her. Last time I saw the woman who used area code 809, the area code used by con men and con women around the world, she had been fucked up too. Had damn near been FUBAR. It was after she had given birth to her and Scams' so-called baby in a safe house across from the Thelonious Club in Buenos Aires, Centro Armenio. Her face had been crushed into the street when the beast had used his foot and tried to grind her face into the concrete. Her face had been marred, lips swollen and busted, had cuts all over. It was hard to tell now, not without looking close, beyond the makeup. Her sister looked like lust, but Arizona looked like love unrequited. One woman a man wanted to fuck, the other he wanted to marry. She said,
"Sit."
I didn't move. She softened her tone. "Please have a seat." "That's better." I sat while the luxury plane hit the runway and glided upward toward the skies. Arizona said, "Pardon me for being curt and on edge. Don't want to be still too long. Especially in Argentina." When we were at 40,000 feet, I glanced at my Rolex, saw the time, then looked out the window and said, "You're safe. Unless someone attacks you in a military jet, you're safe. Safety is an illusion, a luxury not many can afford." She had a device the size of a Palm Pilot. The light flashed green. No high-tech surveillance was pointed her way. It told her that I wasn't wired or trying to wirelessly steal any information from her. A second device, the same size as the first, was on the table too. It lifted information on all cell phones, laptops, and Palm Pilots. She could be robbing me. Knowing she had Wi-Fi, I motioned to it. "Turn that off." She said, "Sorry, was lifting credit card information from people at the airport." She also had a Toraya satellite phone made in the United Arab Emirates and functional in more than 120 countries, from the high seas to the North Pole. I said, "You've been working since you fled Buenos Aires." "Money never sleeps." "You lost $17 million a while ago, when all this began." "I've gotten a third, close to a half of that back, working other opportunities." "You mean cons?" "As they say, a sucker is born every minute."
"Don't end up on the 10 most wanted fugitives list with Semyon Mogilevich."
"I'm smarter, much smarter. I could hit his pocketbook and he'd never realize it was me. But there is an honor among thieves, more or less. Stealing from the government is easier."
She handed me the Turaya, from the Arabic name for the constellation of the Pleiades. It was also known as Seven Sisters and located in the constellation of Taurus. I had no idea what that had to do with a phone. Didn't care. Was too hard to think about nonsense. I asked what I already knew.
"From Queen Bee and her rogues gallery in Uruguay?"
"She will contact you when she needs your services."
"How do you know her?"
"I know her. That's all that's important."
"You told her we were in Uruguay?"
"I wanted to make sure you made it out okay."
"You didn't trust Scams?"
"No, I didn't. So I made sure you were covered the best I could."
"What do you know about the men from Uruguay?"
"They want to be the four horsemen of the apocalypse."
I left a few job openings available. I put the phone on the table in front of me. A tall, rounded vase with a base and a stem was on the chair next to Arizona. It was the type used for storing the ashes of a cremated person. It was seated and buckled in with care. I asked,
"Your brother's remains are in that urn?"
She nodded. Emotions rose, but she suppressed them. The ashes of her brother. The four horsemen had killed him during a battle in the streets, the same one that had left Sierra tapping on death's door. Arizona had been tapping on that same door. I hadn't been with him at that moment. The beast had killed her brother, and she had thrown a knife into the beast's back. She thought she had killed the beast. I knew the truth, but I would let her go on believing that lie. I said, "We watched you have a baby. An ugly baby."
"Not my finest moment."
I said, "Pobre sue quisque fortune." She nodded when I recited the first part of the password from the Buenos Aires job, the one that, in combination with the briefcases, allowed access to the king's ransom. I said the second of three passwords.
Odaches fortuna juvat.
She nodded. Then she said, and the third password was your name. It was Gideon. That surprised me. It surprised everyone. Especially Scams.
He hated you. He was jealous of you.
He had everything. Why would he be jealous of me?
Me?
He had you.
Did he?
For two blinks, Arizona softened. Looked like the ingenue I had met in North Hollywood. I saw the girl I had fallen in love with. Then she was back to being Queen Scams, all business, seated on her throne. She said, I could have died with my brother on the streets, at the base of General Justo José de Urquiza. I could have died in the rain with my brother. I could be in an urn. We all almost died. Medianoche and the Beast. Never saw any motherfuckers like them in my life. Were you afraid? Yes. From the start. When I tried to save my sister, I knew I was dead. The baby bump. Saved me. If only they knew. Wish I could have seen the looks on their faces when they realized they'd been conned. By the Queen. Arizona inhaled and exhaled her brown cigarette, tinted the confined space with the scent of cloves, puffed only twice. Then she put her cigarette out. She sat quiet for a moment, breathing the scent preferred by two of her lovers, legs crossed, a queen on her throne. She said, Gideon, I've been thinking about when I met you in North Hollywood. Back when you were wearing off-the-rack clothes and driving a broken-down Hyundai, you were pretty broke yourself. I was new to the business. I saw you, and I would have done anything to have you. Been watching Battlestar Galactica. Been listening to Miles and Coltrane. Been thinking about us at the Parker Meridian. Same for the day we had in North Carolina. The day we went to the theater and saw that horrible Sharon Stone movie, then went to the Carolina Inn. You remember what you told me you had forgotten? You said they never happened.
They happened. I remember. Never forget either time.
That's a new song you're singing. Last time, you denied New York and North Carolina, she said.
They are always on my mind, especially when I bathe and listen to Coltrane.
The jobs I did for you must have been on your mind, the men you needed handled.
No, us together, making love. I remember the first time we made love,
I corrected her. Fucking, the first time we fucked.
I should have given you the chance. To do what? You wanted to be my boyfriend, for lack of a better term.
You didn't want that.
I should have been your girlfriend. After the first Scams died, I should have come to you. You had a ranch with horses in California. You had other properties. I should have been with you. We could have done something. I've been wondering what that would have been like.
Hindsight.
There was a job, the Lake and Heath job, but I'd also come to London to be with you.
Back when you wanted me to go to Amsterdam and kill your sister, Sierra.
I had felt like everyone I knew had betrayed me. Everyone except you. I think I needed you. I was outside your hotel room door. I went to the My Hotel, located near the British Museum. I was going to shower, get in bed with you. Feel safe while I put my heart on the line. But I heard her. I heard you. She was loud. You were with another woman. A woman you'd met on the plane. You hadn't known her 8 hours, and as soon as she'd left the plane, you fucked her?
You snooze, you lose.
I was angry. I had no right to be angry, but I was. I should have just told you how I felt.
Might have changed a few things.
Is it too late to put all that behind us?
You tell me. Is it too late to put two men named Scams in the rear view? Never know when another Scamsito might pop up. I'm sure the original Scams had more than one son. Next one might be from Iceland or Thailand. Men like him spread legs, breed women, and move on to the next. They leave namesakes scattered all over the globe.
The first Scams was my boyfriend.
He was sleeping with you and your sister.
It was complicated. He used to knock you around. I was a foolish girl, like most girls who came from nothing and grew up in the streets. I mistook abuse for love.
His son?
The second Scams, he was all business. He had connections. He was more ambitious than his father. He took me to another level. I learned a lot dealing with him.
You loved him, too.
There was no love. Then you used him. He was a means to an end. A means to an end, not an end in itself. He's dead. I didn't shed a tear. Actually, I know it sounds cold, but I felt relieved. One less motherfucker to deal with. One less backstabber. His properties and money will become mine. I might keep a house here and there, but the bulk will be converted to cash and moved to my offshore accounts. I shook my head. He thought he could escape the horsemen by staying at sea. I stayed in the air. Since I left him, I had been on this plane. If I needed to land to refuel, I never left the plane or went into the airport. I let airport security be my first line of defense. You slept with him to use him. He slept with you to use you. He fucked you, softened you up, and convinced you to call me, and you convinced me I owed him a debt. I sense no robbery, not between you and him. You pulled me into a world of trouble, Queen Scams. Call me Arizona, same as you always have. Just call me Arizona. Is that your real name? No. I haven't used my real name since I was a teenager. I've been Arizona so long, this is the only name I answer to. This is who I've become. Why the name Arizona? Because a man saw me in the Nordstrom's in Montclair, California. I'd already done a Doris Payne number and distracted the salesman long enough to steal two rings from a jewelry store, and then we were trying to shoplift a dress. We had purses that were lined with aluminum foil so the alarms wouldn't sound at the door when we boosted tagged clothing. He came up to me and asked me my name. I didn't tell him. Wouldn't tell him. Then he told me I was hotter than Arizona in July. He told me that security was watching me, said they had been on my tail since I'd left the jewelry store. He offered to buy the things I had in my bag so I didn't end up in jail. He told me that if I wanted to steal, if I wanted to become a grifter, he could teach me to be smarter at the game. And I bet that man was Scams. The original Scams. Yeah, it was. For a moment, I felt like I had been saved by Prince Charming. I won't ask how Sierra got her name. She was with me when I met Scams. He drove us home. We lived off the Sierra Avenue exit in Fontana for a while. He called her the PYT from Sierra Avenue because of that. Then he just started calling her Sierra. She liked it. And she's been Sierra ever since. Never knew that. No one does. We had a mother on drugs, a father MIA. We raised ourselves, my brother, my sister, me. We were girls and a boy from the gutter. I used to drive through middle-class areas like it was Disneyland, told myself I'd be on their level one day. Now I realize they had nothing. Back then, I hustled, stole, did things to make sure my little sister and brother had food to eat. Stealing was a survival skill. We didn't have it like the middle-class people. Anything I stole, I sold for food. Nothing was for me. Paid more than minimum wage. Stealing is how white people became rich. The rich have left many dead bodies behind. I nodded. I've worked with the rich. I know their secrets. Then Scams took me to the pool hall in the valley. I remember that place, 8-Ball Corner Pocket, run by Big Slim. She smiled. Scams taught me the basics of the game. Big Slim's pool hall was a witch's brew of gangsters and con men. She said, thieves, pickpockets, and swindlers. And killers. And killers. We'll never forget the electricity I felt when I saw you that first time. What was I wearing? I nodded. You came in wearing your flight attendant uniform. You were a flight attendant by then. You changed. Came back in booty shorts, sandals, a tank top with a white girl giving the world the middle finger.
You remember?
I could tell you were a hedgehog, and a man had to get past the quills to get to the soft parts. I wanted you. I didn't care if you were using your job to be a mule for Scams. Thought we'd have some sort of Bonnie and Clyde, Romeo and Juliet thing going on. You told me to be with you. I needed to have $1 million in the bank. Arizona asked, is it too late for us to see what this energy is that exists between us? Yeah, it's too late.
Why?
I could give you 1,000,000 reasons. I hurt your feelings. Rejection makes men become petty. I'm not being petty, just being real. Things are clear now. Back then, if you had made me that offer, I would have gone on Oprah and jumped up and down on her couch. You've changed, I've changed. So it's like the night in New York and the day at the Carolina Inn didn't happen. They happened, but they have no currency. They mean nothing.
She gave me a wounded smile. You'll want me again. We're done, Arizona. We were done before Scams the Younger. We never really were, because you never got over Scams the Elder.
When you want me, remember this moment.
Is this a watershed moment?
I lowered my wall for you, Gideon. From the moment I first saw you, I used to dream about you. All I wanted was you. I tore down my wall for you. Now, it's been rebuilt.
Parker Meridian, Carolina Inn, Coltrane, Miles Davis. Just moments in our past. You'll want to make love to me again. You don't make love. You only know how to fuck. And the better a woman fucked a man, the more a man was convinced she was making love to him. I learned that from you.
Don't throw my words back at me. Don't think I'm a fucking fool.
No one called you a fool.
Don't fuck with me. I have a lot of blood on my hands because of you.
She sipped her watermelon martini. Scams' son meant nothing to me. I only slept with him after I came to the hotel room in London and found you with a woman. I stood at your door, heard you fucking her. A stranger you met on the plane. Not until then, not until I found you sleeping with a stranger, did I even consider him being my lover. It would have been you. You saved me from men my sister had sent to kill me, and you saved me from Lakenheath.
Well, no need for us to review all of that. We know how it went. I was thrown in the Thames. You were killed. I killed a few people. If not for Scams, you would have stayed dead. He saved the man I cared about at the time, and I guess he became my hero.
The Russian came by with drinks. I took a beer. When she walked away, Arizona said, "Shall we talk business?" The pen drive will have all the files, accounts, and passwords for the horsemen.
Did you extract the information? Will I be able to get the money they stole from Scams?
Money never leaves your mind. Not even when blood is all over the dance floor.
I don't like losing. Not to a woman you met on a plane, not to the horsemen.
Medianoche did a swan dive. I didn't have time to get the information.
They killed my brother. They killed my friend. And they have killed my family, my mother and my brothers.
She took a breath, modified her tone. Do you want to negotiate? I don't negotiate.
You have it.
You have what I need to take back the money they stole from Scams.
Yeah, I do.
But you're not going to give it to me.
You don't deserve it. You know better than the Scams resting at the bottom of the sea.
She gave me a half smile, then stood, threw her martini glass against a partition, and walked away, each step hard, her ass sending me a negative message that she was the queen, that there would be consequences. The music changed. An old-school jam played. Kellis was screaming, "I hate you so much right now." Arizona sat in a recliner in a different section, legs crossed, one bouncing, high heel halfway on. The Brazilian flight attendant came to me with a laptop. She cleaned up the mess Arizona had made. Everyone stayed away from the queen. I logged on to my go-to-my PC and connected to Powder Springs. What I saw made me bend over, and the tears came strong. Catherine was in the house. The boys were back at Powder Springs. They were alive. Then I was surprised. Hawks was there, and so was the Bajan. Hawks was sitting up under the Bajan, and he had his arm around her. I used the satellite phone and called the house number. On the computer, I saw everyone jump when the phone rang. Catherine ran to the phone, looked at the caller ID. She answered, afraid, hopeful, unsure.
Hello?
I cleared my throat, wiped my eyes. Hey, it's me.
Jean-Claude?
Yeah. You're okay? You're okay, right? Catherine jumped up and down, shouted, "It's Jean-Claude!" Hawks and the boys made it to Catherine's side first. The Bajan went to them and stood to the side. A gun rested in the waistband of his jeans. I didn't let her know I could see them all. Hawks knew there were cameras in the home, but didn't know I was watching them all right now. Stephen yelled,
"When are we roller skating on MLK again?"
Robert ran and picked up the other line.
"Yeah, we want to go roller skating."
My mother with her French accent. My brothers, one who sounded German, the other who sounded British.
The United Nations was safe again. After my brothers told me hello, Catherine made them get away from her and get off the other line. They always did what she said. I asked, Catherine, are you okay? Did anything happen down up there?
Are you okay, son?
She was crying.
Are you okay? I need to know you're okay.
I'm okay. I'm okay. I had some bad intel on you guys. You're safe.
Am I? Are we?
Medianoche is dead. Mr. Midnight is dead. Her voice shook.
All of the people he worked with?
All gone. The one who was the leader, the Beast, is dead too. She paused and looked at Stephen. I waited for her to talk about the Beast. She said,
Alvin White was murdered. It was on the news. The newscaster you like, Jewel Stewart, she reported it 3 nights in a row. It was on Facebook. It was in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
He was my friend. He was my first best friend. Never had friends growing up.
He was a great man. I admired him for trying so hard at everything.
I know what they did. One by one or two by two, they all paid. Not that it will do any good for him or his family, but they paid. Then I added, yeah, Medianoche is dead.
Where are you?
On a flight, leaving the epicenter of hell, heading back to North America.
Will you come here? I need to see you face to face.
Since you're okay, New York for a day or two, then there. I hear Stephen and Robert in the background. Tell the boys I will come there and take them roller skating, then we can go to Fun Time on Buford Highway and bowl a few games. Friday I can take them to a baseball game.
Here in Atlanta?
In Chicago. Friday we can fly to Chicago, spend the night, spend Saturday at Wrigley, then fly back Saturday night. They can bring their homework with them, if you approve.
As long as they are back in time for second service at church.
You go to church?
We go to a Catholic church. They need church.
I'll have them back from Chicago in time.
I would like to go. I would like to get away from here.
You can go too. She paused.
They thought you were dead too.
I'm fine. She dabbed her eyes.
Will you take your brothers to Woodstock to practice shooting at cans and bottles?
No. I won't do that anymore.
No, take them. And I want to go too. I need to remember how to use a gun.
What happened down there that has you turned pro-NRA?
I want them to know how to use a gun.
In case people like me come in that direction. Silence sat between us. I said, you need to remember how to use a gun? When have you used one? She paused.
Never. I have never touched one. Not since I was very young.
I let that contradiction go. But that excited utterance went into my memory bank. There was a lot I wanted to talk to her about, but now wasn't the time. I needed to know if she had known that Medianoche was alive, and I needed to know about her and the Beast. She had never mentioned the Beast. I needed to know who my mother really was, and why all the lies and secrecy. Catherine took the phone and went to the kitchen. She told me about how she had run to the townhome where Jeremy Bentham was staying, and taken the boys there to hide. He wasn't there with her. I didn't know how much he knew about our lives. Catherine, the woman formerly known as Thelma, handed the phone to Hawks. I never would have imagined them ever being in the same room, let alone inside of Catherine's home. She told me she had drowned a preacher in the Chattahoochee River. I said, thanks, Hawks.
Have you called our jefe?
No. Are you crying? Is he okay?
You went off grid like an idiot. He's not happy about that.
You're crying.
Just my allergies. They act up when I get too worried about a fool.
We talked for a moment. The Bajan had gone back to the living room. Hawk said,
Jeremy Bentham.
What happened?
When your mama got to his townhome, she asked him a few questions. Asked him why there was no record of him existing until recently, as if he had just been invented.
How did she know there weren't any records of him? What was his answer?
Well, you had told your mama to look around his stuff,
and she did what you asked. Not long after, he got in his car, drove away, and vanished from the face of the earth.
You made him vanish?
The Bajan did. We had horsemen coming out the yin-yang. Shotgun had been killed up on South Cobb Drive, and I wasn't taking any chances. Shotgun managed to take out 3 people in the same kind of suits, left them all so they'd have to have closed casket funerals, and I knew they had to be associated with the horsemen. I just didn't know if more were already here.
I said, Jeremy Bentham, so I won't get a chance to meet him.
Not without a seance or a Ouija board.
I told Catherine to be careful.
Too late for that. She found out the hard way.
Stubborn woman, not good at listening. Real nice, but has her ways.
At least I see where you got your hard head from. I will say one thing. She loves her children, and she is real protective of her boys, and they are real protective of her.
Who was Jeremy Bentham after?
Her or me?
Both of us?
No idea, but all of his identification was fake. Real good forgeries.
How much ID did he have?
Your mama found 6 passports in his house and about 100 grand in cash.
I asked, what currency?
Most was American money, some British pounds and euros.
No reals from Brazil or Argentine dollars?
We didn't see any.
What does that mean to you?
He wasn't out of South America. Someone from across the pond put him there.
He could have been like your mama. He could have been a man with a past, some kind of a nasty past, and come to Atlanta to start over. A lot of folks go to big cities to get lost. In the South, the ATL is the best place for that. He might have liked the name Jeremy Bentham because of the English philosopher, or he might have just been a fan of the television show Lost. Hell, I asked him if he chose the initials because of James Brown, but he refused to say, got real angry and combative when he was confronted. He doubled up his fists. So the Bajan kicked him in the head 3 times. That changed his attitude. When we hogtied him to chat, he told us to F the F off. We didn't have time for no foolish games.
You did the right thing. I wouldn't have been that nice. Was he part of that blackmail thing against you? The guy who blackmailed me, he's at the bottom of the ocean.
Well, who was this one? Where did that roach come from?
I never met him. He never tried to contact me. Only Catherine.
And now you never will meet him.
Was one of the passports from France?
Sure was. France, Germany, Russia, and one for here in the USA.
The other 2 passports?
Belgium and the Netherlands.
And she didn't know him from France or Europe.
She said she didn't. Said it was her first time meeting him when he flirted with her.
She was his target.
I guess, but your mama is real pretty. Could have just been that he was a con and liked pretty women. Her accent gets men's attention, too, especially down here in Bubbaville, and she has a nice figure, too.
Any weapons in his house?
None that we could find. Everything else was normal.
Computer?
He didn't have one. He didn't even have Wi-Fi at his town home.
He could get Wi-Fi at any Starbucks. He might have been someone's eyes and ears.
He was seeing your mama. He was sleeping with her. She's broke up about it, but I told her, then showed her all the evidence. We went over it all together so she could be clear. She felt like a fool behind it, I will tell you that much. And she got real angry. Real angry.
I'll talk to you when I land in the USA.
Well, since you're okay and everything is handled, we're gonna leave soon.
We? She whispered.
Gideon. I know you're probably looking at the cameras.
Not yet.
Well, the Bajan helped. Constantine didn't want to take no chances and sent him down here, up here, after they shot Shotgun.
Where you off to?
Have to break out my passport again and go to Wales.
Need backup? She hesitated.
MX-999 is going with me.
Who is MX-999?
The Bajan. That's the name he uses when he works with some collection agency called RCSI. He's got some issues with them.
He mentioned that to me. How bad?
Big time issues. So I might end up trying to help out.
MX-999. What does that mean?
Long story on that one. That RCSI group, they are some horrible people. Anyway, the Bajan is going with me. But thanks for the offer. He's still there? He's been here, locked and loaded, watching over Catherine and the boys. We didn't know how many horsemen were up this way. She was staying in a motel with the boys, but decided to come home as long as the Bajan and I stayed around and helped her look for trouble. We just got here a few hours ago. The Bajan came first, made sure it was safe. He's a nice guy. Constantine said that 007 was a nice guy. It's MX999, smartass. He's different. And before we go, there is this other thing. What other thing? The information I have on Nathalie Marie from here. Y'all been through a lot, and I think y'all need to make sure y'all are in the right mind before you look at what I have for you. What did you find out about her connection to Yair?
Some lies are prettier than the truth.
That's why some people have to lie. She's earned your empathy. No, you have my friendship. You trust me and my judgment? Yeah, I do. Put some time between this and that. Let them be happy you're okay. And you can spend some time being glad they're out of danger. So, you know something about me that I don't know? We're done with this, for now. I paused, soaked in reality. Thanks for the help, Box. Thanks for everything.
You get beat up, you fall off another building.
You know how I roll.
I have an extra box of BC powder. We'll leave it here for you.
I still owe you for the last box.
Think of it as an early Christmas present.
Okay.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Thanks for Puerto Rico. I mean that. I really did have a good time.
You're a woman who means what she says, and says what she means.
Learn to be that kind of man, Gideon. Not for me, but for yourself.
I said goodbye, ended the call, and went to Arizona. I reached in my pocket and took out the pen drive. She sipped on her martini, then looked at me like she could no longer trust me. I told her, you get into the horsemen's systems. The money they forced scams to transfer into their account, it's yours. The rest is mine. Every dime. Don't leave enough in that account to rub two quarters together. No money? Then there can't be any more horsemen. She nodded.
That works for me, Gideon.
I'm doing what I promised I would do. That's all.
Thanks for being fair.
Lake and Heath tried to rip me off back in the day on the Katrina scam. And scams? Didn't trust him as far as a monkey can throw shit. That's why I kept the passwords to myself. He would have stolen it all and left me out to dry.
I needed you down there.
I told her. I want all of the horsemen's files. Only for me. My eyes only, not for you.
Agreed. No problem.
You can watch me if you want. I handed her the pen drive. She pulled out a laptop and went to work. Amazing how any laptop with Wi-Fi could be used to break into any system that had the same. I asked, mind changing the music? That song gives me a headache. Soon, Miles played. When his song ended, Coltrane began. Arizona said, you killed your father. Same as scams, the first one did.
If I did, it wasn't the same.
If?
Or maybe it was. Maybe it was the same. I left her to working, to cracking into systems and stealing money. Soon she had her millions, the money that had once belonged to scams. The horseman's war chest was sent to my offshore account. I had millions. I'd find a way to get more money to Alvin White's widow and kids. I'd have an accountant send a stipend each month, set up college funds, and some would go to Stephen and Robert and Catherine. I had the comb with the beast's DNA. I would get Andrew Sven's DNA and send it all in. As I had been before this fiasco in Buenos Aires, I was back to X, Y, Z. I'd call Medianoche's DNA and mine AB, asshole and bastard. Those would be sent to DNA Solutions in a separate package. Right now, my blood brother's truth was the most important. The truth about my father had bothered me most of my life. Even though Andrew Sven never said anything, I know it bothered him. One day, Stephen would want to use his real name,
would want to only be Andrew Sven, would want to know about his identity, and would start asking Catherine questions about his father, who he was, how they met, and what happened. He knows what she did when she worked on Barrack Street, but he would want something definitive. He should know who his father was, or who he wasn't. I could give him that truth. If there was any truth in what Medianoche had said, I could look my brother in his eyes and tell him that his father was a strong man, a military man, a leader who jumped out of airplanes and went on secret missions. I would say he had died in battle. He had paid the ultimate price, protecting his army in a war down in South America. That would be my spin. I wouldn't ever tell him I was part of that war. I would never tell him I was his father's enemy. And I hoped my brother would never find out. When Arizona was done, she pressed a key and the horsemen's files were purged from their system. Then the hard drives were written over with hexadecimal code that was nothing but gibberish. When the Policía Federal Argentina finally broke the codes and went to the 17th floor, the computers would be paperweights. From the 17th floor to Las Violetas to Ciudad Evita, Policía Federal Argentina and Los Bomberos had work to do. My job was done. For a second, I had a flash of Señorita Raven and Foxy Brown. I told myself I had done the right thing. I went to the back of the plane to go to the bathroom. I washed my face like I was trying to scrub away my personal horrors, my PTSD. When I came out, Sierra was waiting at the door. I went to move by her, but she blocked my path. She gave me eye contact. The stoic, silent siren gazed at me the same way she had a few days ago, like rabid lust chained to a stake, growling, struggling to get free, but under her control. She kissed me, put her tongue inside my mouth, pushed her breasts against my chest. Then she sighed and walked away, her bowed legs doing a slow sashay by her big sister. That soft exhale was the only sound I'd ever heard her make. Arizona's back had been to us when that sexual harassment had gone down. Days ago, I had gone to rescue Sierra when she was wounded in Argentina. I had transported her to Scams's yacht. Maybe that was her version of a thank you kiss. Or maybe because I had refused to put her down years ago when Arizona had sent me to Holland. The stoic, brown-skinned Filipina had surprised me. I had stood up to Scams, and Scams had pulled a gun on me. And without a gun in hand, I had made that bitch back down. He was dead. Maybe in her eyes, he had died a king. But I had been a warrior. And even a king never rose from his throne to battle a warrior. She knew I had pulled the sword from the stone. Maybe she wanted to be my reward. Many queens became enamored of war.